Hello, Weekside Podcast listeners. This is Jenny Vrentis. I am here with Connor Orr. And as promised, we have a special mock draft grading episode. Connor Orr, who is the official mock draft grader at the MMQB, has spent Monday morning tallying up the results. I'm a little bit nervous. He even sent out a poll asking for who people thought would win. I was not doing well in the early exit polls. I don't know the final results of that, but basically Connor has taken Albert's mock draft, my mock draft, and his mock draft, and he has applied a grading scheme that is accredited somewhere and has not told me. So I'm going to find out live the results of this year's mock draft challenge. Connor.
Yes, thank you, Jenny. The accounting firm of Orr Waterhouse Cooper is thrilled to be involved in this year's draft tabulation. Always a great joy for us to be able to get involved, to show people who the real masters of the craft are. You know, last year, obviously, that was you winning the first annual MMQB Boozy Mock Draft Challenge. You got a lovely bottle of rosé. That was good. Did you end up having that bottle of rosé? Was it nice?
Definitely. I think I had it immediately. I mean, as soon as I chilled it, of course. but Shelby, our producer, and I were talking about what the winner will get this year. And I imagined we could still do a bottle of wine to ship it.
Yeah, you know, the world is changing, but that doesn't mean that traditions have to die here at the MMQB podcast. So a couple of interesting, fun notes for this year's poll. So, first off, we did reach out to the general public to see who they thought was going to win this year's challenge. And I would say that after some early polling difficulties, Jenny, you surged ahead and you were actually the leader in the clubhouse coming into today. So I gave the good people of Twitter four options. I said, who did you think would win the MMQB mock draft challenge? Albert Breer, Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, or the fourth option, me, for not caring about this at all. That blew the field away. That was by far the highest number of votes out of the 120 votes that we got. But next was Jenny. After that was Albert, and third was Connor. So,
wow, that's a stunning turn, because when I voted this earlier today, I voted for Connor and I saw that I was polling only 7%.
Ooh.
So I guess I've made a Joe Biden like comeback from the brink of oblivion.
Yeah, this was your South Carolina. Good for you. So just to go over the scoring a little bit for everybody at home, this is how I do things. I just adjusted it slightly this year because I had half points last year, and I added a category this year just to kind of spice it up a little bit. So 5 points for a direct hit. That means the player, the team, and the slot. You got all those right. That's the bingo. 4 points for player and team. Correct in any iteration in the first round. 3 points for player and slot, which I think is something that I added in because I think that's valuable. I think that shows judgment ability. I think that shows that, you know, obviously people are paying attention, talking to the right people. I did not get any of those. And then 1 point for if you get the team and the position correct. So if you've identified that the Broncos needed a wide receiver, but you didn't have the right wide receiver, you got 1 point. So a wide disparity in the scoring. So I don't know. How do you want to do this? How do you want to do the big reveal? What do you think is the best way to do it?
I think we should do it as if this was a beauty pageant, or excuse me, a scholarship pageant, Miss America type. So maybe start with the second runner up.
Okay. Okay. So in third place with 34 points was Orr. I finished in last place again for the second straight year. One of the things that I did, which was, so I tried to find something nice to say about everybody's mock draft. but based on any metric that I could possibly find, I could not find a nice thing to say about. So at first I was like, wow, I got a lot of one-pointers, and so maybe I got the fewest zeros out of anybody in the mock draft. Not true. Got the most zeros out of anybody in the mock draft. Another thing that I tried to look for in this was to say who got the latest direct hit. So a direct hit farthest back in the round. My last direct hit was 7. The Panthers. Nothing really to talk about there. This was a tough one for me. I would say that early on, was tripped up by, I had the Dolphins trading up to 4 to get Justin Herbert. That was a smokescreen that just kind of enveloped my entire draft. At the time that I was doing the mock draft, I was listening to a podcast with Lewis Riddick, and he said that if Isaiah Simmons was still there after the Giants picked, something like he would fall on the floor and have a heart attack or something like that. And I'm thinking, okay, they interviewed Lewis for the job. They are obviously very keen on his insights, not that he's informing anybody's decision. Dave Gettleman needs to do something different this year and break out of the mold. Not so. So I had Isaiah Simmons there, which ended up hurting. And then from there on out, just a hodgepodge of bad. This was a tough mock draft for me. But 34 points, third place. I will wear it like a badge of honor. No booze for me this year.
I think, Connor, you for the second straight year have done your selection in the worst week. So we've gone Orr, Rentis, Breer, like the 3 weeks leading up to the draft. So I think next year we've got to just change things around, because you're at a spot where, you know, more information comes out and teams become closer linked to players. And I think sometimes the final day or two before the draft, as we saw this year with Tua, there were a lot of things that didn't make sense. But I think where you're doing your mock draft is a little too far out. So I think you're at a disadvantage. It's like I was a swimmer growing up and you're in like lane 8. You're against the wall. You don't have great position. You can't necessarily see the swimmers that are in lane 4 or 5 who are the fastest seeds. So, you know, you're trying to do the best you can with difficult circumstances, Connor.
That's like they used to make us run track in the off season to stay in shape. And so there was really nothing that they could do with me because I threw the shot put. But after you're done with that, there's really not a whole lot to do. And it doesn't really put you in great shape because you're just standing around. And so I had to run what they called the reserve races, where it basically was just filling time in between. And it's like all the kids who don't get to run. And I didn't have running shoes. I had like these high top basketball shoes, and I was running the 200 meter dash, and it was exhausting and it was terrible. But I always tried to get the first lane, like the most inside lane, because I was convinced that it was shorter than all the other lanes. Is that true? Like if you're in the middle,
out, right?
You think it evens out?
Yeah, because you go farther. I think. But I think there's some benefit to that. But definitely in swimming, if you're like in lane 8 or lane 1 against the wall, there's no benefit there because you don't get like the currents from the others or whatever. Being against the wall is bad. You could hit the wall with your hand if you're doing like the butterfly. You can't see the rest of the competition. So you don't know when you have to like kick it into high gear, or if you're doing a longer race where you're like worried about pace, like a 500 meter freestyle. This isn't a swimming pod, Connor, but we've really gone down the road with this analogy. So I'm committed to it.
No, I am too. What was your specialty? Like, well, you hold multiple records still, unbeatable records that have stood since the 1990s.
At the neighborhood pool,
yes.
The Park Forest pool, that's correct. I think the 50 backstroke.
Wow.
Is it the 50 or the 25 backstroke? I don't remember which one it is. But one of them I still hold at the Park Forest pool because I actually was visiting my parents last summer and I took a walk and there was a meet and I walked in and I said, oh, this is so nostalgic. And then I walked past the scoreboard and my name was still there, which I think speaks to the level of the neighborhood swim team, that perhaps it's not the most competitive that I could still hold a record a couple decades later.
I think you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. That is the Jenny went to the 40th best high school in the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, this is a competitive place. This is where people want to send their kids. So that was a swimming boontown. Like I think that is one of those great sort of Drew Brees-esque maybe records that we just expect that will remain for a long time. What's a good, like, maybe the rushing record, the Eric Dickerson, the rushing record or something like that, maybe?
Yeah, I'm a similar level athlete to Eric Dickerson, so I think the analogy holds.
Jenny's high school beat my high school, by the way. We both went to high school in Pennsylvania by 2 in the latest U.S. World
Report. Oh, 2 slots. Okay.
2 slots. Yeah, okay. We were right next to each other.
State College and Abington Heights.
Yeah. What was your, were you also the Nittany Lions?
We were the Little Lions.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be the Astros in the 70s because, like, that was a big thing with space and exploration at the time. But then everyone started calling us the Assholes. And so we changed it to the Comets.
Okay. All right. Comets. Yeah. All right. Not bad.
Okay. Second place.
So first runner up.
Yes, I was last place with 34 points, a big jump now here to 50 points, almost double my score. Second runner up, drum roll, we have Jenny.
With all right,
50 points, just an excellent showing, I thought. If I'm not mistaken, if I tabulated this correctly, you had the fewest number of zeros. So you scored at least a point on almost every single pick, with the exception of a few. And I would say that you had 2 excellent late round picks. You had Patrick Queen to the Ravens at 28, which I really liked, and that was your latest direct hit. However, at 22, also the Vikings and Jeff Gladney, where it wasn't a direct hit, but it was a player team match. And I had not seen a lot of people pairing those two together. So well done, Jenny. Another fantastic draft for you.
I actually forgot about that one. It was just, I mean, it was kind of hard to match the corners with teams, but felt like he might be a good fit for Zimmer's scheme. So, okay. So that one worked.
Yeah. So if you're curious, for direct hits or team player fits, you had Joe Burrow, Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, Herbert, Tua, the Jets, and Mekhi Becton, which was a good one. Not a lot of people had that one, too. That was another rare one. The Vikings and Gladney, and the Ravens and Patrick Queen. So I would say, all in all, another very, very strong showing for Dr. V in year 2 of your mock draft.
I would say it was a somewhat disappointing showing. You know, things went a little haywire after the first 6 picks, but we did our best, Connor. We tried to fill in. I think this year there was a lot of teams where you kind of knew what their needs were, but then it was hard to match the exact player to that need.
You know who really ended up, speaking of State College, screwing all of us, because we all made the same mistake and we all got a 0 in the exact same spot, was your boy, Gross Matos. We all had him going to Seattle at 27. We all got a big goose egg for that one. That was a rough one.
That was a tough one. Yeah. The other thing that was kind of difficult in this year's draft was the order that the receivers came off the board. That mm-hmm. was a big surprise.
Yeah, John Gruden, never a stranger to throwing us a curveball, as we saw last year with Cleveland Farrell, and that messed up a lot of people's mock drafts. But yeah, this year, taking Ruggs when he did, and everyone had Judy kind of ranked at the top of that board there, that was interesting. That really threw us for a loop there. And the tackles were hard, too. I don't think, I'm trying to think, I don't think anybody got, none of the 3 of us came close to getting the tackle order right either.
Yeah, because I think, right, I agree. That was the other position group that it was kind of hard to rank, was what order the tackles would come off. Everyone agreed on the 4 top tackles, which those 4 were, they all went in the top 11, right? By the time Becton went to the Jets, the 4 top tackles were gone. But I think we all had a trouble kind of pegging what order they would come off. And I don't think many expected the Giants, like the Giants we thought would take a tackle, but I think a lot of us got Andrew Thomas wrong, that he wasn't projected to be the first tackle in a lot of mock drafts.
Yeah, you and Albert both had Wirfs first off the board. I had Mekhi Becton first off the board, but yeah, interesting. What was your, you know, who else really impacted this all? I mean, obviously Jordan Love was a big curveball for everybody, and for the three of us too, the Packers. I mean, that was ridiculous. I mean, you and I both had the kid from Colorado. Albert had Rieger, who ended up going to the Eagles earlier on. But yeah, nobody could. Brian Gutekunst and John Gruden, just total wild cards here.
Yeah, we all went with weapons for the Packers, which I think was a fair expectation. Not only did they take Love, but trading up for Love, but that was, of course, the big stunner of round one. So that was a big zero for us as well.
Yeah. So as much as it pains me to say, the winner this year with 63 points, almost a full doubling of my score, at the top was Albert Breer. So I texted Albert because I graded his first, and I didn't tell him who won, but he did have a good draft. You know, I would say that some of the more impressive ones there was Brown to the Panthers at 7, and then Isaiah Simmons at 8 was a big one for him. I gave him, it's actually 63.5, so I did give him like a half a point for something. That was like an in-between decision there. But Chazon from the Jaguars at 20, Jackson to the Dolphins at 18, and then Isaiah Wilson to the Titans at 29, which was pretty good. So I would say congratulations to Albert. The 2020 MMQB mock draft champion. We'll have to get his drink of choice. What do you think Albert likes to drink?
I was just going to say that. He probably doesn't want a bottle of rosé, but we could just send it to him and maybe his wife would enjoy it. His wife is a nurse, so she deserves the rosé wine more, I would say, than any of us.
That's a great idea. Instead of awarding Albert, let's understand the times, the people we should be thanking. Obviously, thank you to Emily for all the hard work that you do there too. So yes, Emily, a bottle of booze is on the way for you. Don't have to share it at all with your husband. You earned it. All Albert did was, you know, they teach you at Ohio State to just guess and test. And sometimes, you know, it comes up, you know. And
yeah, so it sounds like he had some pretty good hits in the mock. So we'll give him some credit begrudgingly. But, you know, next year, I think we're just really hoping to build on this year's lessons, Connor, and just try to get better.
I am curious because I just, my problem is I just get into this mode where I think that too many things are going to change. And this is something that really stuck out to me. I don't know if there's an anonymous scout Twitter account that's out there. And this person just kept banging at every single member of the media saying, you guys are going to be so wrong this year. Nobody knows anything about any of these players. And, you know, the mock drafts are going to be worse than ever. I don't think that's true. I think it was almost the opposite, where I feel like more people had a majority of the right people in the first round as a whole than we have in years past. Like, I think we knew the people where they were going to go or when they were going to go, but not necessarily where they were going to go as much.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, Connor, because I felt really uncertain when I did my mock, and maybe I tried to, because of that, maybe I tried to get too tricky. Like I said, okay, well, Panthers, you know, have been linked a lot to Derrick Brown, a lot of rumors that they like him. But when I did my mock, Isaiah Simmons was there. And then I got caught up in this whole, you know what, he's the perfect fit for Rule. And I should have just gone with the obvious, right? So, yeah, that's a good observation, because we thought that, you know, there's just, every year we try to mystify the scouting process. And sometimes it is just what it is.
I remember when I was, I did my first mock draft when I was working at the Star Ledger. And at the time, you know, there was the push for, you know, we were a newspaper on sort of like unstable ground. And so that's kind of around the first time that everyone started talking about page views, and you need to start doing things that people click on more. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll be the paper's like mock draft person because people like mock drafts. And, you know, so I dug in, I really did an earnest like 22-year-old or effort on this and tried very hard. And the first draft was the Ryan Tannehill draft. And I remember that everybody had him going to Miami, but I said, well, what if he slips to the Cardinals? And I remember thinking like that was like going to be the big backdoor in for me to establish myself amongst the mock draft hierarchy, was to nail this pick, to hit the one that nobody expected. And then long story short, after the draft, I was reading Peter King's MMQB column, and Peter, and obviously was someone that I looked up to a great deal and read a lot when I was younger. And so I was the only one that had Tannehill to the Cardinals, the only one. And there was a note in his column that just said, Tannehill to Dolphins, as expected. Anybody who put him anywhere else simply trying too hard. And
Connor,
then
wow.
I remember thinking like, well, I guess I was on the radar a little bit. I was on Peter's radar a little bit, but he definitely banged me on that one. So well deserved. And the point being, just don't get too cute, or, and I did again this year. Like I'm not taking my own advice.
Yeah, I definitely got too cute. Maybe I was, feeling good after last year's mock, Connor.
Little froggy.
Never feel froggy.
What, I don't know. What else, we gave the people what they wanted. This was a big, this was like sort of a big seminal moment closing down the draft. What are you looking forward to now? I mean, this is sort of, we're into the great wide open a little bit. We have the schedule released this week. But I don't know. I mean, it sort of feels like we're at the end, right? Until we get further instruction a little bit.
Yeah, we're all kind of in limbo. What's ahead? It's just kind of strange to think, Connor, that a year ago this time we were sitting in the studio and Albert had gone on a mission to find a rosé at a wine shop somewhere near the office, and we were all reviewing the mock draft. And then I think we went on to go through each of the odds for the team that year, right? What mm-hmm. did we do? We picked
we did over-unders for
over-under
wins.
For win yeah. totals. That's right. So all of those things feel kind of far away.
Yeah. If you had to guess right now, I mean, we're recording this Monday, 12:30-ish, the first week of May. What are you feeling right now? I mean, are we going to all these players that we just mocked and judged and are watching get drafted, when are they going to play and actually take the field?
Yeah. It's hard to make a prediction because I don't want to sound like I actually have insight on the subject, but it's just hard for me to picture a season that begins on time as normal. All of the discussion about what will happen seems to be centered on the availability of widespread testing, and it seems like there's still a lot of leaps to make in that department. Also, seeing photos of places opening up around the United States when a lot of parts of the country, the outbreak is still getting worse. So it's just, I don't really know what the next few months hold, Connor, and yeah, it's hard to imagine that we'll have football on time. What yeah. about you?
I don't know. I saw Albert tweeting a little bit today that I think someone had estimated that he had reported that two owners had estimated that they would lose about $100 million in gross revenue if they did a season without fans, and that most owners would much rather start the season in November than to start it without fans and lose the money. So I think if you're following the money, and our Mike Rosenberg also had a good column about, well, if the NFL thinks the season's starting on time, why is Roger Goodell furloughing himself, basically? So follow the money a little bit there. And I don't know, maybe we have like a little, like a fun Thanksgiving start to the season. How about that?
Yeah, that could be interesting, a little different. I think we're all just kind of embracing things as they come and not worried about what is normal anymore, right? So like a year ago, the idea that the season would be shortened at all and that would be horrifying to people. And now I think people would be just excited to have football in some capacity whatsoever.
Yeah. What's one good uplifting pandemic tale from the weekend? What's something good that happened this past weekend?
I actually have one, Connor.
Yes.
I went for a Sunday evening walk in the park, you know, with a mask on, keeping my distance, right? So I do a little loop that goes on some of the back paths in the park that are less crowded. So as I'm coming through this shortcut area, kind of by the North Woods in Central Park, I hear music. So at first I heard Frozen's Let It Go, and then I heard New York, New York, which I've heard probably thousands of times in the last couple of weeks. I mean, if you cover a baseball game at Yankee Stadium, you know that they play it at the end of every game. So if you're a baseball reporter, I can imagine that you are tired of the tune. But it's like a nightly thing in New York when there's the cheers for healthcare workers. Usually someone plays it. But so I'm rounding this, and I'm like, where's this music coming from? It's not 7 p.m. No one's doing the cheers yet. It was around 6, and there was a new NYPD truck parked on the loop in Central Park, and it was playing music. And there was a family with a kid that was kind of near it, and the child was dancing, and they were just playing different tunes. So after New York, after Sinatra's song, they played Footloose, and then they played some Bon Jovi, and they went through different tunes. So it was like a social distancing concert. It was a concert in the era of Corona. I thought it was pretty creative.
Very cool. That's awesome.
How about you, Connor?
Big weekend here. I live in a house that was built in the 50s, and so all the rage thing in the 50s was these things called capped gutters, right? So your rain gutters have lids on them so that no debris can theoretically get in. They didn't know at the time that, of course, debris is going to get in copious amounts. And so they fastened it with these old-fashioned like flathead screws. And so I was super grateful for trying to figure out like a puzzle basically all day. You know what I mean? It was like, it took like 4 hours, and I ended up getting out, apparently a family of squirrels has been living there for the last 5 decades.
Wow.
So we had to clear out all of their belongings. But yeah, so I was grateful for the opportunity to, you know, for like 4 hours, I'm just up there not thinking about, you know, anything except for squirrel poop in my gutter, you know? So never did I think that I would say that sentence, but I was very grateful for just like a good old fashioned like puzzle and a distraction. And
yeah, because it's hard to get puzzles these days. They're all back ordered.
Exactly. That was my next point, which was that Jenny got me into the adult coloring craze, which is another thing that I went on to Amazon, and everything is back ordered for adult coloring books. Everything. The colored pencil sets, the books. But I'm very excited that as I'm saying this, my pencil set arrives tomorrow, which is going to be big. And then my Scenes of the Woods coloring book will come this weekend, which is going to be big. So just a lot to look forward to, you know.
That sounds great. Well, next week in our first episode of the Weekside podcast, we can discuss the adult coloring book. I think it sounds like a great choice. You said wooded scenes
of the woods.
Of the woods. Oh, great. I have a New York themed one. Everything's New York these days, but Scenes of the Woods sounds very serene and peaceful, Connor.
Yeah, you know, we do what we can. But anyway, congratulations, Jenny. First runner-up. Dr. V, I think, is still very much established as a mock drafting powerhouse. Orr's got a long way to go here. This is 2 last place finishes in a row. Congratulations to Albert, but mostly thanks to Emily, who will be receiving the prize this year. So good on all of you guys.
And thanks to you for grading, Connor. Orr Waterhouse Cooper is a real force to be reckoned with, and is really a recognized commodity in the mock draft world. So we appreciate your service for this show.
Excellent.
And we will check back in with everybody later this week. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.